I'm Heather Bosch at the World Trade Center. Where the Twin Towers collapsed into the ground, you now hear construction.
My proposal was to take the site and bring it up to grade.
Architect Michael Arad and his team have brought the ground back to street level, adding two massive reflecting pools in the tower's footprints.
Well, I think it comes to life with the water.
It's so vast to look at. It's almost overwhelming.
This is meant to be a powerful moment.
The pools are surrounded by the names of those who died in the attacks. Underneath this memorial is a museum.
The museum will be telling the story of the what happened, the why, and what does it mean through artifacts.
Joe Daniels, president of the National September 11th Memorial and Museum, says the artifacts range from a piece of steel bent by the airplane's impact to pictures from office desks.
It's meant to say from a big and small scale, this is a very human story.
And the story continues. Half the 16-acre site is dedicated to the museum and memorial. On the other half, four buildings are taking shape, including One World Trade Center.
It is also itself a symbol. It's a commercial building. It's being filled with businesses, just like the World Trade Center was. We will both remember what we lost. Even in that memory, we will rebuild even higher than we were before.
Heather Bosch, CBS News, New York. September 11, 2001. Newlywed Monica Eichen's husband calls her from his office on the 84th floor of the World Trade Center's South Tower.
He was like very calm and everybody was... He said, everything's under control, everything is fine. They said to stay where we are, you know.
But the tower next to his has just been hit by a commuter plane. In another part of the city, architect Michael Arad heads to the roof of his apartment.
To see what was going on, and because I heard that the North Tower had been struck by an airplane, and I thought it must have been an accident. And then I saw the South Tower get hit by that second plane.
Arad rushes downtown to find his wife, who was working near the towers. It would be nightfall before Eichen would understand her husband's fate.
I heard something. I went to the door. I opened the door, and I jumped up. I put my legs around him, and he was like, he said, everything is fine, I'm in a good place, I'm fine. And, you know, I woke up feeling, oh, my God, he's gone.
Eichen is among the many families who never got remains back to bury. She worked to preserve Ground Zero, seeing the site as their final resting place. Arad saw a void that would never be filled. The two ideas would merge.
When you walk up to the edge of the void, all of a sudden it seems to open under you.
In the footprints where the towers once stood, Arad designed two deep reflecting pools. Water cascades down the sides, but they never fill. Around the edges, the names of those who died in all of the separate terror attacks of 9/11 and in a 1993 bombing at the towers.
What you see during the day are really these shadows that form the names. And at night, it's light.
So the names will actually be lit at night.
From within.
A place to reflect, to remember, and for this 9/11 widow to find some peace.
He's home, finally. He's home. He's home. He's there. I know where he is. I know where his spot is. So exciting.
Heather Bosch, CBS News, New York. This native New Yorker vividly remembers 9/11.
Especially when the buildings came down. That was like one of the most hurtful things. You know, it hurt. Deep.
This local kid talks about his family's response to the attacks.
My parents did donate and they tried to help out.
And he remembers what happened next.
A bunch of people called me like Osama when I was younger.
Both Muhammad Haq and Ayub Suleiman.
I do feel a little bit of discrimination.
Are Muslim.
While nearly a decade has passed since 9/11, we continue to see a steady stream of violence and discrimination targeting Muslim, Arab, Sikh, and South Asian communities.
Thomas Perez, an assistant U.S. attorney general, says Muslims make up less than 1% of the U.S. population, but 14% of the Department of Justice's religious discrimination cases.
Yeah, I feel I can say that I'm a Muslim.
Sabor Wali, who prays at the Islamic Cultural Center of New York, says discrimination isn't always obvious.
But the point is that you still have, you know, the undercover haters.
Suleiman explains.
You could be standing outside in front of a mosque somewhere, getting ready to go make prayer or whatever, and then cars will come through the block, and, you know, people look at you, and you say to yourself, you know, these people are looking at us like we're terrorists. You
know. Are they angry or afraid?
I think it's not angry. I think it's afraid. And they're afraid because they don't know Islam.
But that's not the only opinion here.
I think it's much better, slowly improving.
Less discrimination. I mean, we're friendly with one another. We greet each other.
A recent survey found, although most say it is tougher to be an American Muslim post 9/11, most are also happy with life here. In fact, the Pew Research survey found satisfactions increased since 2007. That's despite controversy over a mosque near Ground Zero and a congressional probe into whether terrorists are recruiting American Muslims.
I met with people whom I never knew before because of 9/11.
Omar Abu Namus is the imam, the religious leader here. He says 9/11 forced Muslims and non-Muslims to talk and learn about each other.
So indeed, it had its silver lining, you know, a cloud that had a silver lining.
He believes most Americans now understand that when it comes to 9/11,
Islam is not the culprit, you know, in this case, is not the criminal.
Heather Bosch, CBS News, New York. I'm Heather Bosch in New York.
Just listening on in church, order of guests.
Where Battalion Chief Joseph Pfeiffer checked out a gas leak on September 11th, 2001.
We checked the area with meters, and it was kind of routine.
This documentary by the Naudet brothers captures the buzz of a low-flying airplane. It was heading for one of the Twin Towers.
We knew that this was a terrorist event.
You knew it wasn't some kind of bizarre accident?
No, this was a beautiful, clear summer day, and we saw the plane actually aim for the building.
Transmit a third alarm. We'll have the staging area.
We evacuated people from the building, and that's both the north and the south tower, and we started a rescue plan for those that couldn't get out on their own.
Battalion 1 to Division 1.
But communication problems complicated a growing disaster.
There were two planes. I saw the second one hit.
When the smoke cleared and we walked back to the site, we saw the skeletons of the building, and we knew that many people were lost.
Including Fire Lieutenant Kevin Pfeiffer, the chief's brother.
You had to be there. I mean, I was there. I gave orders to a number of people that didn't come home.
Current Fire Commissioner Salvatore Cassano.
They knew that they were going to be for the worst fire that they've ever been to. Nobody walked away.
But the price was high. Hundreds of first responders died, 343 from the New York City Fire Department alone.
And every day I walk into this office, those people motivate me.
This is the fire department's new operations center.
Pfeiffer is now chief of counterterrorism and emergency preparedness. He showed me a room that looks like mission control at NASA. The radios, TV screens, computers, and other equipment are the department's eyes and ears.
That's exactly what it is. How do we connect to people that have information in real time, and how do we share that information with the commanders at the scene?
Information can be quickly shared within the fire department and with other agencies. In addition,
September 11th told us that not only are we going to be first responders, we're going to be first preventers.
Commissioner Cassano says first responders receive counterterrorism training.
Go, make your way up the block, please.
That, plus a campaign encouraging people to report anything suspicious, is credited with stopping a car bombing attempt in Times Square last year. And what's learned here,
whatever we learn in New York City, we're going to share with the fire service and any law enforcement agency that needs it,
is shared throughout the country
to ensure that that never happens again.
Heather Bosch, CBS News, New York. They survived the unimaginable.
It was like thunder in the house.
And it sounded like a train coming through.
All you could hear was bam, bam, bam.
People were crying. There was kids screaming. And
scariest thing I ever seen.
These are not survivors of the 9/11 attacks, but of the May 22nd tornado that tore through Joplin, Missouri.
And there's nothing there. It's gone. I was in tears.
But the experiences are so similar.
We're going to take the flag to Joplin, Missouri. And we're going to let the whole town of Joplin stitch the flag on 9/11.
The torn American flag was recovered from Ground Zero. Jeff Parnes, who lost a friend and business partner in the attacks, has taken battered Old Glory around the country for repairs.
Soldiers and school kids who survived the shooting at Fort Hood, Texas, have sewn this flag. World War II veterans on the deck of the USS Missouri in Pearl Harbor on Pearl Harbor Day sewed this flag. Martin Luther King's family sewed this flag. This flag is really knitting together the fabric of the country.
This is just one of the projects from the New York Says Thank You Foundation.
I personally will never forget what it was like in the days, the weeks, and months after 9/11 when you walked through the streets of Manhattan and saw, you know, Chicago firefighters, police officers from California, rescue workers from Japan. Wherever you went, there were people that went out of their way to be here for us.
Parnas struggled with how to say thanks until his son Evan heard about a California wildfire.
There was a story on the news how a girl, she lost all of her stuff in the fire.
Including her toys. Evan, who was 5 at the time, decided she needed new ones.
Kids usually, they see the world in a way that not how are we going to send toys across the country, but we have to send toys across the country.
I challenged him to collect toys from all the kids in our apartment building. 3 days later, we had 100 volunteers. We had 500 New Yorkers load up a 17-foot U-Haul that 2 days later, me and 2 friends drove from New York to San Diego.
Now, each year, New Yorkers head to a part of the country that's been touched by tragedy. In 2006, the volunteers rebuilt Baker Chapel, a church destroyed by a tornado in a tiny Indiana town.
400 people came up to me, tears in their eyes, to hug me and say, God bless you. And I just looked at them all and said, look, we're just doing what people did for us. You want to thank me? Show up on the next one. And every year, the people from Baker Chapel keep showing up, and these people keep showing up in larger numbers every year.
Rebuilding a church, repairing a flag, helping someone who's suffering when you know what that's like. Parnas says it's empowering.
And I think the reason it's grown year after year in the amount of support we've gotten from local communities is because at the end of the day, what we're all doing is not really about 9/11. What we're doing is about 9/12 and about honoring that sense of spirit and kindness and volunteerism and unity that's so much more powerful than the tragedy that happened the day before.
Heather Bosch, CBS News, New York.